Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in this week for Carrie Miller. Today, a roundtable discussion about entrepreneurship in Minnesota, specifically minority entrepreneurship. The economy is strong. The unemployment rate is low. But are minority-owned businesses benefiting from a stronger economy? We invited three guests who are well-versed in entrepreneurship to help us learn more. Dr. Bruce Corey is Associate Vice President for University Relations and International Programs at Concordia University, St. Paul. Joanna Ramirez-Barrett is Vice President, Business Solutions at Meta. Meta provides business consulting, access to capital, and market opportunities for minority entrepreneurs. Ken McCrary is owner of KMS Air Duct Cleaning. He is also a member of the Minority Goods and Services Association. Well, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Ken, let me start with you. So, national economy is nearing 10 years of economic growth, national unemployment rate 4.1%, Minnesota, the unemployment rate 3.3%, and for the Twin Cities, 2.3%. So how is business for you these days?
Business is good. In this type of economy, I think businesses like mine, we definitely get business. I think the goal in an up economy for a minority business is to work on the private sector. And that is establishing those relationships that in a down economy that they'll keep that business going. So there's work, you know, publicly all over the place. But it's that private work that has higher margins that kind of helps a small minority business, you know, keep going through the times when, you know, the interest rates are up, the economy isn't as so good, and the unemployment rate, trying to keep employees. So right now things are good, but, you know, you're always kind of forecasting when the economy's not good.
And so where do you see your growth opportunities?
You know, for my particular company, you know, I'm hoping to, you know, kind of expand out, you know, in areas that, you know, we normally don't do those kind of niche places that we can grow, whether it be, so we do air duct cleaning,
yep.
Lead remediation, asbestos, that might be putting an office in a place that we usually don't get a lot of work at. That might be, you know, trying to grow those categories or services that we offer that, you know, that we don't do a lot of in private sectors.
And Joanna, what is the experience for the people that you work with, the entrepreneurs you work with in this current business climate?
Definitely, as Ken said, you know, in an up economy, things are good. And, you know, we really have a special niche and we work with businesses a million or more in revenue or those with the potential to get there. And the reason that we work with those businesses is because as they grow, they create jobs and people of color hire more people of color than their non-minority counterparts. And so we really see the added benefit of growth of these businesses.
So are you seeing, you know, what Kendra was saying about with private sector employers or larger private sector companies being more willing to hire minority businesses than, say, looking back at 2008, 2009?
Well, what we know is that the job growth, the new job growth happens in small business. So 80% of all new jobs are coming from small businesses. And what we know from the work that we do is that on average, 56% of the clients that we work with hire, or all of the clients that we work with, 56% of the new jobs that they're creating, they're hiring people of color.
Okay. So, Bruce, your research, and you've done a lot of research on immigrants and the role that immigrant entrepreneurs have had on the Minnesota economy, the Twin Cities. And so much of the discussion today is about the drain of immigration. You have a very different story.
Mm-hmm. Immigrant business and immigrant workers, I mean, the what I would call immigrant capital, the different ways in which immigrants enter the workforce as workers, entrepreneurs, as global networks, as cultural capital, I continue to see that important role that they are playing, not only in Minnesota, but globally. But I'm also beginning to see that the tension of people when they make choices, whether the U.S. is still going to be that attractive place where they could work very successfully and grow. And so I think it's at a critical point where I think we need to continue to keep the doors open, continue to have policies that are open, welcoming, but also serving the needs of not only immigrant business, but minority-owned businesses in general. As a group, these businesses would be the largest employer in the state, 70,000, the last statistics that we had. And the other interesting point to note is that many of these, of the total number of businesses, about 9 to 12% are employer-owned. And most of them have employees between, employee-based business. Right. Most of them are employing between 1 to 4 people. So it's one of Minnesota's most under-tapped engines for economic growth. And picking up your conversation about how are they doing right now, I think it's at one of those points where I would call the gray area economy, where these businesses want to grow, they want to take a loan. Now, the question is, where would they get the loan from and who will help them? And the kind of resources available to help them in that next level or B2B, that's the need of the hour right now.
Okay, so that's one of the areas that I really want to get into. But before I get there, I want to ask you, Ken, what is the lure of entrepreneurship to you?
I think for me, it was, I've always been an entrepreneur. I always wanted to own my own business. I didn't know what that looked like in the early stages. But, you know, I want the opportunity to try to work harder than the next guy. And I didn't really see myself as, working a 9-to-5. I didn't see myself working in a factory. So for me, it was just having an opportunity to, that's kind of my artwork.
Right, the creative side of
it. Yeah, kind of creating a business. And, I've been lucky in life in that, I've had a lot of good employees who have worked for me, and a lot of professionals have kind of maneuvered, my thinking, over the years. So, but I think, again, just to answer your question, for me, it was being able to create something that was my own.
And how did you get in the particular business you're in?
Well, I kind of moved to the Twin Cities, and I was going to get a regular job, and someone told me that, hey, it's this air duct cleaning company that's hiring. You can make a lot of money. And so I did that for a few years. I struggled when I started my own business for 6 years until I kind of figured things out. And then, just the normal, way businesses eventually grow to, find associations that you should belong to, figure out standards, the way that you should do things, and then figuring out the financial stuff, that each small business should have. So, for me, it's been kind of a step-by-step process.
So, Joanne, is that a familiar story to you? I mean, I think it's underestimated how much being an entrepreneur is a creative industry. We think about it, creative businesses, right? That's in media, or you're in advertising or graphic design. But it doesn't matter what business you're in. If you're an entrepreneur, it's a creative business.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Ken is just a great example of, knowing an industry and being able to get the education along the way that he needed to take his business to the next level. And that's part of what we try to do at Meta, is helping those businesses access the capital that they need. They may not be able to get a bank loan, get the education that they need. They may be very creative in the industry that they're in, and they know that industry backwards and forwards, but maybe they haven't had formal training in business development and how to run a business, how to do HR, how to stay on top of your finances, et cetera. And then how do you access markets and how do you get those contracts? And so that's where Meta comes in and really tries to help those businesses take it to the next level.
Okay, so Bruce, you're talking about these barriers to expansion, these barriers to growth. Is capital, access to capital, one of the big barriers?
Yes, and to comment on that point on entrepreneurship, there's another dimension of entrepreneurship that's tied to this, and that's a survival, a backup plan. And a lot of people, minority immigrants, if they are facing barriers in the workplace, turn to entrepreneurship because they get the freedom and the independence to do things. And your point about access to capital is important. The Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland recently came out with a study documenting now nationally, but included Minnesota, that there are significant barriers to access to capital. And I think that while there's some very good success stories in MEDA's recent experience of accessing more capital, it requires more widespread attention across the financial sectors. And I think it's worthwhile reviewing the findings of that study and seeing what implications we have for Minnesota. You know, Dr. Myers from the Humphrey Institute did a study to document discrimination in financial capital a couple of years ago, but nobody's paying attention to it.
Well, so, and this is for anybody, but maybe you, Joanna, you know, there is this ecology that has developed in the past, maybe probably the past decade, or at least I've been aware of it the past decade, to encourage entrepreneurship. You have the Minnesota Cup, you have Beta Minnesota, you know, it's sort of, you have angel investors. Are minority entrepreneurs being included in, reached out to with these initiatives?
Well, at MEDA, we're trying to make sure that that happens. So one of the things that we did, our president and CEO, Gary Cunningham, got asked to be a Minnesota Cup judge. And he asked, hey, how many minority-owned businesses are in this
reasonable
competition?
Question. Yeah.
And they said, we don't know. And so he said, we're going to do a prize, a minority prize, for all those businesses that are people of color that make it to the semifinals. We want to give them a $10,000 prize for the top one. So the first year we did $10,000. The second year we came in with our $10,000. JP Morgan Chase came in with an additional $10,000. And then we got an additional $10,000 for the second prize winner from the Department of Economic Employment and from DEED.
Gotcha. Yes, we know who DEED is. Yes.
Employment and Economic Development.
Yes.
And so we're trying to get more visibility out there that these businesses are there. You know, Ken's business is there. He's got how many employees did you say?
28 to 34.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, that they are contributing to the economy and creating jobs.
And so, Ken, where does your financing, and going back to when you were starting your company, tell us a little bit about your experience with financing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for myself, in most small businesses, you know, when you first start out, you know, you kind of finance, you know, it could be with credit cards, you know, and, you know, you're going out doing jobs or getting contracts and, you know, what money either you've saved or credit card, you kind of start that deal. But that's an expensive way to do things. And then you get to the point where you kind of worked it out and you have money coming in, but you don't really have any real bank financing. You know, you might be with a bank, you know, you don't have the numbers or the profit and loss statements, the balance sheets, things of that nature that you need to get a loan, and probably don't know about those things to get a loan. But then as time goes on, and in the green room, I was just kind of talking about that, a national bank that I had been with for 20 years, you know, wouldn't give me a loan. And then kind of working through some things, I realized that, you know, probably all these years I should have had a relationship with a smaller bank, and and a business banker,
right?
And kind of established that deal. I went in every year and you know, deposited money and wrote checks and, you know, had a good credit rating and the whole thing. And once I got with a smaller bank, that traditionally, you know, lends to small businesses, the landscape kind of changed for my company. I can tell you that that most small businesses probably don't know that. Everyone thinks you come in with the business plan, and if it's written really nice and a nice letterhead, that you know, you're trying to convince someone to give you a loan. But everything has to do with the numbers. You know, so just like any small business, you know, You know, there are phases, like I said, the credit cards to being able to work on your receivables and to get a bank loan for a line of credit. But, you know, I think that, you know, the relationship, you know, with the bank and they see where you are, you know, both personally, whether it be your house or a building that you're trying to buy. And, you know, they can kind of funnel you into, you know, how to get that line of credit, you know. And I can tell you, I mean, I am a fan of MEDA, and they have some good programs. And maybe, you know, for me, early on in my business life, you know, if I would have had maybe some of those, you know, went to some of those groups or maybe, you know, had someone steering me in that direction, you know, maybe my business maybe would have even grew bigger than it is. But you kind of have to find your own way, you know, sometimes, so.
Yeah, I was interviewing someone the other day, and they were opening a restaurant, and they, in order to get a bank loan, they put down for a $50,000 CD so they could get a $50,000 loan. Mm-hmm. So essentially, they were self-financing. I mean, that's a fairly common story, I think.
Yeah, I tell you, without getting into names and numbers, you know, we do more than a few million a year, and in this large bank. Which we went over to a smaller bank, and that was our deposit. Of course, we left $300 in there because you don't want to burn any bridges, right? So they've never called me. They've never called and said, you know, we see you're not deposited anymore.
Wow.
And so that's kind of a tell of kind of where you need to be, you know, as a small business.
A common experience is people initially start off with either informal financing or personal loans, and when they're successful, the banks come to them. And then when they go to the bank, there's a cultural dimension. A multi-million dollar entrepreneur was telling me the story that when he went to the bank to meet the banker, he went with someone of the same culture of the banker. And once that was resolved, he said, let's do business, and he got his loan. So there are these relationship things and what we might call discrimination and perceptions of people on who is a viable investor and what it is. We need to clear those noise factors from the market to unleash this huge potential in Minnesota. And what is also very positive is I'm engaging with a number of minority and immigrant entrepreneurs, and they're also now serving as a role of investors. They are thinking about how that they could come in and play a role and you've been hearing of these in the news, either in the Somali community or in the Indian community, which is a good trend.
So recycling the money within the community itself.
And helping the next generation of businesses to grow.
Joanna, you're...
Well, we do a lot of helping people navigate the banking system. So whether it's repackaging a loan in the way that it's being able to communicate with the bank and talk about that business in a way that those bankers understand. And the banking community has been a great partner for us. We do a lot of companion lending. So we try to come in with the least amount of money and leverage our MEDA dollars 4 and 5 times with other banks in town.
But one of the things, Bruce, you know, you mentioned the Cleveland study. There are plenty of studies, you know, that are documenting in the capital markets, the financial services industry. There's just a lot of discrimination. There is. But this has been going on for a long time. I mean, so what do you think would be most important to at this juncture that you mentioned? You say we're at this juncture. So at this juncture, we have a strong economy. There is opportunity there. We do have a vibrant minority entrepreneurs, vibrant minority community. I mean, what is it that would really break down this discrimination in the financial services industry?
There could be many leverage points. One leverage point I would point out is the role of the public entities. State, local governments receive millions or billions of dollars and deposit it in financial institutions. Wouldn't it be too much to ask them to look at their lending practices and have them make sure that they are proactively lending in low-income neighborhoods or in minority and immigrant communities? And unfortunately, Dr. Meyer's study was received by both the city council.
And Dr. Meyer is from Humphrey Institute, right.
Was received by both the city council of Minneapolis and St. Paul with billions of dollars invested, and I haven't seen any proactive measures coming out of them. And now we're not talking about the state. The state is holding again. So the public sectors can leverage the banking institution by calling them and saying, you're receiving public money.
Right.
And why can't you play a proactive role in loosening up and creating a very flexible, open credit market in Minnesota?
Yeah. So and one thing is, I guess, going to jump back to you, Cannon, but everyone's mentioned it's not, you know, the importance of entrepreneurship, but also the workforce. And I don't think there is a management or a company out there that isn't complaining about the difficulty in finding qualified workers. So what is your experience?
So for my company, you know, I have guys that have been with me for, you know, 18 years. And my company is probably about as diverse as you get. We're probably about 75% minority. But I mean, that's not, I wouldn't say on purpose. That's, you know, just, you know, minority companies, you know, usually hire employees that look like them, right? But I think for what we do, it's been my experience where just over the years where I have an employee come in, and it's like a 5-year investment to get them from 1 to 10, right? So, and that's color aside, you know, no matter where that employee comes from. And it's like an, you know, kind of like an investment into your business. So for me, that's, you know, it might start out with a, you know, a 19-year-old that just got out of high school to learning how to work, you know, how to come in on time, how to, if they're sick, how to, you know, how to work through, you know, letting your boss know that, hey, I want to be with this company, and then being able to offer, you know, some benefits besides, you know, by the minimal, you know. So it's investing into, you know, that employee. That's worked well for us. You know, now we've had employees that lasted 2 weeks. You know, like I said, we have guys that lasted 17 years, right? But but it's kind of the whole culture. We kind of run as a family culture with my business. I mean, there's some guys who started in high school, that, went to college and, came back every summer. Now, you know, now works in our sales office, you know?
Okay.
So it's, you know, for us, it's kind of an investment, you know, into, you know, those employees. Now I can tell you, being the owner, I can say that. Not all employees, you know, whether it be employees that work in my office or employees that work in the field, I guess, you know, you have to be committed to it. Not all your employees kind of understand that, right?
Right.
So sometimes there's second chances, and sometimes is putting those employees in areas where they're going to be successful, and not everyone understands that. So,
my guests this hour are Bruce Corey, Associate Vice President for University Relations and International Programs at Concordia University, St. Paul. Joanna Ramirez-Barrett, Vice President of Business Solutions at the Metropolitan Economic Development Association, or META. And Ken McCrary, owner of KMS Air Duct Cleaning. He's a member of the Minnesota Minority Goods and Services Association. Joanna, what about the role of entrepreneurs, you know, building wealth within a community or within communities? And is that a big part of what you're trying to do?
Absolutely. We really feel like we're in it to end the racial wealth gap. And for a family,
which is huge. I mean,
which is huge.
It's an enormous gap. I mean, if you want to look at the income gap, that's bad.
It is.
Right. But the wealth gap is much bigger.
Yes. And for an African-American family to have an entrepreneur in the home, that increases the family wealth by 600%. And for a Latino family, it's 400%. So we really want to encourage people to get jobs, work for Ken, learn how a business works, see a successful business, and then go out and, you know, buy a business, own a business. We're really moving into, with all of the retirees in Minnesota and people who they own a business, they don't necessarily have a family owner to another family member to give that business to? How do we get some entrepreneurs in there to acquire those businesses?
Well, I'm glad you raised that, because isn't that an enormous opportunity that if you're interested in, you know, the duck business or HVAC or whatever it is, and there are a lot of aging small businesses, entrepreneurial, kids aren't interested, they've gone to other things. Is there an opportunity for minority entrepreneurs or a young person who wants to be an entrepreneur to get a business over time?
You know, I want to share an idea I've been proposing to people about how to grow economic assets at the local level. So suppose we take Ward 1 in St. Paul, the area around Summit, I mean, Selby and University Avenue.
Right.
What we do with a group of community members and with academics, we study what are the businesses out there. And say, suppose there is a restaurant or a grocery store or a dentist or whatever. We find out what would it take to grow that business so they hire more people. And then how could we connect them to the resources, the meters of the world to make it possible? And that local community develops a plan and lets their elected official know about those plans so they can champion it. It also becomes their baseline data. And this way will be a trickle-up economic development happening by local communities, seeing your neighborhood stores, seeing your neighborhood people who need jobs, and seeing how we can connect them to the opportunities.
And is this something for MITA to be acting as a matchmaker, or at least, you know, saying here's this opportunity out there? How can we help people take advantage of it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, definitely during the economic downturn, we saw people who were working in corporations who lost their jobs and they started a business. And so what we've seen over the last 3 years, we thought that maybe we had done about, you know, 15 mergers and acquisitions. And looking back, we've done 41. And, you know, our entrepreneur of the year this year was Jason Eisen, and he worked for an elevator
company.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And they were retiring, and he wanted to buy the business. And he came to MITA. We helped him with financing. He bought the business, relocated the business. We helped him with that, find a building in
North Minneapolis,
right? Yeah. Where he's creating jobs in that community. And he did elevators for the U.S. Bank Stadium. He did the largest building in Dubai. And he is a success story. And now we've got a partnership with Junior Achievement, and we're doing entrepreneurial training in Patrick Henry High School. And he is one of our mentors, and he's one of we get to take these young people to Jason's business in their neighborhood and show them you could do this.
And Ken, you're making a little bit of a shift here, but I want to get to, you know, you're a member of the Minority Goods and Services Association,
Minority Goods and Services.
What role has this played in growing your business and other minority businesses?
So we're kind of a new association, so we're trying to figure things out. I can tell you it was kind of a group of businesses that are kind of self-vetting.
So by that, you're just saying we're quality.
Yep, exactly.
So you're going to work with us, private sector company X, we're quality institutions here.
Exactly. So, so there's an option with looking at our association and saying, you know, it's not just writing a check to be in the membership. It's a self-vetting organization that it's an option, you know, for goods and services, which is, it's kind of off the beaten path when it comes to whether the public sector or the private sector. There is no association that really addresses minorities' goods and services. So my company, along with a few other companies, have decided to start that.
Ken is raising an important point, because very often the attention for minority business tend to be focusing on contracting, which is huge, but there's a tremendous amount of growth in professional services. And that's where, again, if proper attention is...
Let's just define professional services.
And these are architects, engineers, environmental cleaners.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole group of people. And there's quite an active presence of minority and immigrant firms. And that could be very worthwhile to doing the kinds of things that Ken's doing at that level.
And as part of, you know, having an association like this, I mean, I was talking to one minority entrepreneur and he said, look, here's the thing. One of the barriers that we've run into is sort of like the click. You go to a private sector company, you meet their buyer. The buyer says, look, you look good. You're, you know, I think you do run a good business, but I've been working with so-and-so and I've known so-and-so since kindergarten. And why am I going to take business away from him? Because he's been doing a good job. Do you run into this?
Yeah. So this is kind of the thing that I talked about. You know, when an academy is up, you're looking, you know, for opportunities in the private sector. You know, the public sector, you know, whether let's talk construction or even goods and services. I mean, there might be, you know, a percentage that they're asking for, you know, for minority goods and services companies. Where in the private sector, there's not. Like you said, there's longstanding relationships. And then you talk about the procurement process and the men and women who work in the procurement areas, you know, publicly, you know, it's looked at as, you know, you have to diversify your spend. In the private sector, you might walk into a private business and there's no diversity at all. There might be diversity in the blue collar areas, but there's no diversity in the upper office. There's no diversity in procurement, and so usually when procurement people, they might hire companies like you said that long standing, right? But they're less likely to take not only so much a chance, but they're less likely to bring in another company that does the same thing and another company of color. So, those positions are you don't see because they're privately held companies. 9 out of 10 times they're not given a report on a diversity spend. And if the reports are on a diversity spend, you don't see where that money is going or how that spend is actually, you know, taking place. That diversity spend could be, you know, writing a check to an organization and saying, this is our diversity spend, or creating a program that doesn't have, any diversity in it.
Our topic for this roundtable is entrepreneurship in Minnesota. Specifically, minority entrepreneurship. Our guests are Bruce Corey of Concordia University, St. Paul, Joanna Ramirez-Barrett of Meta, sorry about that, and Ken McCrelly, owner of KMS Air Duct Cleaning. So, Joanna, I'm curious with what Ken was saying, what your reaction was.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that Ken's been so successful in construction is really amazing because there's just a huge gap, I would say, and it's a tough business because it's – capital is important to the business because to get the contracts, you have to have upfront capital to be able to pay people to get the supplies you need to build. So, you know, it's really true. There was a study by Google that said 85% of white people have all white networks. So that's tough because business, you have to have connections. You have to have people of color in your circles to do business with them. So I think until we break down some of those barriers, we're going to continue to see them play out in the economic realm.
So Bruce, we're talking about networks or mentorship or breaking down barriers to access to capital. I mean, taking advantage of the particular environment that we're in right now. I mean, we have a 2.3% unemployment rate in the Twin Cities. It's about the lowest in the nation. I think we're tied for the lowest in the nation of major metropolitan areas. What would you focus on? What would you say, look, while the environment is in this direction, let's have impatience in this area?
I think if I had that magic wand, the first thing I would do, I would
it would be about nice to have the gray, that. Yeah, when that, it would be yeah, very nice, yes.
That gray areas first is around networking. We surveyed African immigrant entrepreneurs a few years ago, and the top needs were, apart from capital, was access to markets and product development. So how could we, with all the chambers of commerce that we have, build B2B, business-to-business partnerships, so that we can get people partnered and connected to each other? How could we use other kinds of even the rationale in education? For instance, the same study in African immigrants, a small group in Minnesota, they put 500 million, over about half a billion, into private companies buying from mainstream stores. So their business, their customers are minorities, so they should partner with minority entrepreneurs. And then I think an emphasis on those early startup companies, that is businesses less than 100,000, home-based businesses. This is where people's entrepreneurial energy is churning right now. And right. The best way is, how do we connect them to resources that make it happen?
Okay, Joanna, how do we connect them to resources that make it happen? Because this is part of what you're doing.
Send them to Meta. One, you know, as I said, Meta's kind of specialty is businesses a million or more in revenue, right. Those going to the next level. But we also have a partnership called Catalyst. It's a collaboration of all the minority business development enterprises in the city. And we're building a platform that'll be a single-stop shop for minority entrepreneurs, where they'll go, they'll be able to get intake, they'll get assessed. The Accentures come through with their Accenture Academy, so we'll have
online
learning
resources.
So this is the
accounting and consultancy, the consultancy firm, really, Accenture.
Yes, yep. And also we'll have in the second phase online learning, online lending, and then our last one will be matchmaking. So how do we do what Ken's doing on a bigger scale and connect businesses to these minority entrepreneurs and the goods and services that they're providing?
And Ken, how much, whether it's voluntary or involuntary, I don't know, are people coming to you and saying, hey, I want to start a business. How do I do this? Or I'm doing something out of my home and I'd like to grow it. How did you grow your business? Do you find yourself in a mentoring position?
At this point in my business, I would say, yeah. But, you know, along the way, it's kind of trial and error, you know, you kind of make your way. But I can say, kind of going back to your last question there, what do you do to get those businesses? Some of the things that you guys just talked about. But another thing is, it's procurement is kind of raised from top down, right? So you talk to the CEO and you talk to the person that's head of diversity, and they say, we want diversity, with our company, right?
Yeah.
And, you have a big annual meeting and you tell all your department heads, that's what we want, right?
Yeah.
But we all know here, whether it's public or private, whether it's department heads or it's lead foremen or what have you, they have the pocketbook. They spend, they're allowed to do purchases under $50,000 with two bids or no bids, right? So for my business, I want to be able to show my wares to those folks, right?
Right.
Those
yeah.
folks that can write a purchase order, for $50,000 or write a purchase order for $1,100. And so I can show you my wares and show you what we can do as a company. I've came through the back door on a couple of companies that we've worked for and had to, and was lucky to be able to, show those businesses, hey, we can do this work, right? And that kind of moved from a small amount of work for them to say, hey, what about this? Are you qualified or can you size to do this type of work? So it kind of starts a conversation. So in the public sector, when I attend these events, I ask those folks up on stage, can you introduce us to the people who actually have the ability to write a purchase order, right?
Right.
I don't really want to talk to the guy that's in the suit and is going rah-rah. And, I don't want a handout. I want the ability to have a conversation and to show what services I can offer.
With the real decision maker.
With the real decision maker. And that decision maker probably lives in my neighborhood, right? That decision maker probably drives the same kind of car or truck that I drive, right? But maybe they don't have, maybe they don't have diversity as far as corporate diversity in their life, right? And that's what we're trying to do.
And that's how you build your reputation.
Exactly. I don't want to build my reputation on a minority business. I just happen to be minority and own a business. I just want the opportunity to perform.
So, Joanna, how much do you see this, what Ken is describing? I mean, you're nodding your head and
absolutely,
saying—
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think business is the big equalizer, and that's just what we want to do, is equal the playing field and give people equal opportunity to these, you know, kinds of contracts and services, and give them, you know, whatever kind of support they need to take their business to the next level, because it's good for the economy. It's good for Minnesota.
Yeah. Bruce?
I think one thing that Minnesotans should understand a little better is that we are now competing globally. So Minnesota is a small fry in a global world,
right,
of huge cities like Jakarta or New Delhi or Mumbai. And in order for us to compete, we've got to increase the entire boat here too. So by working with each other, by connecting our businesses, by using supplies, by developing our core strengths, we're going to be a stronger economy and stronger competitor.
So one of the things I like about what Ken was saying is that if we had that conversation, you just said what you just said to any CEO in the Twin Cities of a medium-sized to above company, they would agree exactly with what you said. But it's getting that message down to the person who's actually hiring the contractor, the subcontractor, the supplier, the vendor, to get that message to them.
Leadership. And I've seen the state, for example, for the last 2 decades. What a difference in Governor Dayton in the state, and how the state changes the way it looks at minority and immigrant workforce, entrepreneurs, how it trickles down to that person writing that purchase order. That's leadership. Minnesota needs leadership at all levels.
So, Joanna, what about mentorship? Just kind of like our final topic, because we're getting close toward the end of this discussion. But in the small business community, mentorship is a very hot topic. There's a lot of interest in it. And is this something that you feel should be emphasized, de-emphasized? How are you looking at mentorship?
Absolutely. It's something that we offer, you know, so at MITA, we offer the businesses high level technical assistance, but also it's a lonely thing being a business owner. And so we put business owners in CEO mentoring groups. A lot of our board members are from all the various large corporations in town. They provide mentoring to our business owners. And it's just, you know, sometimes it's just a connection or a little piece of information that really helps them. And sometimes it's these long-term relationships and somebody to bounce ideas off of. And so it's a great, I would say, underutilized resource out there, because there's so much business acumen in the Twin Cities. And, you know, a little way that people can give back that can mean a lot.
So I'm curious. So for the radio audience listening to this, what parting thought would you like to leave them? What would you like them to be thinking about when it comes to minority entrepreneurship in Minnesota? Ken?
I guess I would say in the business community to take a look at diversity, what your spend is. Are you just Googling and seeing, you know, what businesses are out there? You look at the people that are around you, right? So, you know, when you walk outside, and if you live in Minneapolis, you know, there's diversity all over the place. Whether if you go to see a live band, if you go to a restaurant, there's diversity.
There is, yes.
So I would say that you should maybe look at that in your everyday life, right? Try something new, right? Whether that's a diverse restaurant, right? Whether that's a diverse business that you're going to try to work with, you know, do some research. And I would also say it's just not for white people. It's people of color as well, right? Diversify, right? Go out of your, go out of what you do normally, right? Your safety zone, right? So if that means you only go to the corner store, then maybe you go down to the store that's, you know, 5 miles away or what have you. So, and that invites conversation.
Joanna?
So the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal comes out with a list of the top 50 minority-owned firms in Minnesota. And we looked at that list. We've got about 88% of those businesses are MITA clients. So I would say to you minority-owned businesses, if you want to get on that list, come to MITA. And to other people, I would say if you have money sitting around and you want a social return on your investment, come to MITA. Our loan fund performs at 98%. I mean, that's like enviable by most banks. And so we are getting the capital out there for these businesses to grow and scale.
And so, Bruce, what would you like to leave the audience with?
The dominant message today is let's come together in Minnesota as a people, as a community. Let us see the various assets and talents each one of us bring to the table. And let's combine work to be, we can be the center of the universe because we have such great talent, such great energy here. And by coming together, by being one, we will achieve a tremendous success.
Well, and one of the things that I have enjoyed this conversation immensely, but one of the things I don't think we emphasize enough in our thinking is about entrepreneurship and raising the profile of entrepreneurs. So thank you very much. I've enjoyed this immensely.
Thank you.
Thank you for having
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having us.
My guests this hour have been Bruce Corey, Associate Vice President for University Relations and International Programs at Concordia University, St. Paul; Joanna Ramirez Barrett, Vice President of Business Solutions at the Metropolitan Economic Development Association; and Ken McCraley, owner of KMS Air Duct Cleaning. He's a member of the Minnesota Minority Goods and Services Association. I'm Chris Farrell. You know I love talking with creative leaders in our state about what drives them. You can hear more of my conversations about the creative economy at nprnews.org. Just search for creative economy.